ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। So the previous topic that we studied, which is renunciation in action, what in Sanskrit we call it as tyaga. He explained that every human being has what is called as choice of action, whereas animals don't have choice of action, they follow the beaten path. So they can neither increase the number of asanas, nor can they decrease the number of asanas. They just come, exhaust their prarabdha and go into the next janma according to the next prarabdha. But once you are born as a human being, then you have what is called as choice of action. With choice of action, you can increase your existing set of asanas or you can decrease the existing set of asanas. So you have the prarabdha, you have the purushartha, the self-effort. Self-effort has a complete freedom to change the vasanas. But once the self-effort is applied, it is applied in the background of prarabdha, so the change for it to be visible will take time, provided you consistently apply the self-effort. So then he is saying, with this self-effort, purushartha that is available to you, you must choose your action, field of action, which is in line with your nature, swadharma, which is the bulk of your lives. So, you have a particular nature, you have a certain tendency. According to that, you choose your field. But having chosen the field, within the field, don't act on likes and dislikes. Because within the field, there may be a few things that you may not like. You know, you choose a field of activity which you really love. It could be sports, it could be arts, it could be engineering, maths, medicine, whatever it is. But within that field, when you are applying yourself in that field, there are a few things which you may not like. You can't say, I don't like this, I will not do this. I like this only and then I start doing that more. You can't do that. If you do that, then you won't excel in that. So therefore, he says, choose the field of activity according to your swadharma. Supposing you choose paradharma, which is alien to your nature, then also you will be deeply frustrated. Because you are there out of some kind of a force, some kind of a compulsion. So your mind will not cooperate. You will be thinking about what you really love and you will be resisting what you are actually doing and you will be frustrated and you will be creating more and more vasanas. And even in the field, you won't be really successful. Even if you are successful, you won't be happy. So therefore, he says, you've got to choose the field of activity according to your love, but within the field, do not act on your likes and dislikes. So when you are in that field, there may be a lot of temptations coming. Don't fall for it. Your intellect must be able to say, no, thank you. Do not fall for it. You can easily settle down, compromise, and may not grow beyond it. Therefore, he says, you must have the intellectual capacity to say, no, thank you. And then, while acting, you should also have the clear understanding that action per se is neither virtuous nor vicious. No action per se can be virtuous or vicious. It depends on what is the intention, what is the attitude. Both the fellows may be using the knife, terrorist and doctor. and plunging the knife into the body of the person. But yet one is trying to save the life while one is trying to take away the life. So therefore you cannot say just by plunging the knife you are doing some wrong karma. Faction per se cannot be considered sin. Because this is what Arjuna was doing. He was considering that a sin, and though it was his swadharma, he didn't want to get into it. He thought he'll go sit in the forest and meditate. How can he meditate? If he closes his eyes for meditation, he'll only be dreaming about war. He'll only be dreaming about archery. That is his nature, that is his swabhava. So instead of exercising himself in that field and then slowly rising to a different height, if he does that, he will be running away from what he loves. You can't close your eyes and say that it doesn't exist anymore. So therefore he says, don't think that something is, good, something is bad. You have to give it a direction. You give it a higher direction, it becomes good. There is this movie called Catch Me If You Can. It is based on a real-time story. Real story. It's a story of a guy who impersonated somebody and was taking the Pan Am for a ride. He is a master in that. He was not caught. But then somehow they found him. One fellow follows him up. In France he catches him. And then he brings him to United States. And he goes through the punishment. Then he's given a chance. If you want to work for us, helping us to nab the other criminals like you, you can do so. So he accepts and then he does that. Now, this guy knows how to do all this. So, but now his direction is different. I was helping the government. That's all it is. Similarly, what people do nowadays is the hackers. A lot of these youngsters, I believe, the teenagers, they are very good in, some of them are very good in hacking. And they do it for fun also. Just for fun, they want to just go and hack somebody's system. Especially if your website and all is not very strongly written scripted. This guy will easily go in and hack it. It is fun for them. They don't know. Don't know the sense. They are not that much thinking about the repercussion and all that. The same guys, they are hired by some of the companies because they know how they can hack. So they'll create software for it. It's the direction that matters. So you don't have to think that this is bad, that is bad, and leave it. A thing like that. And then he says, work is best done when it is done impersonally. Not when you get entangled. I am doing, I must get these results. This is what happened to me in the past and I hope it doesn't happen now. All these are signs of you getting very personal. You do it as an agent, as a, as an instrument. Between 11 and 12, you're supposed to talk on Vedanta, talk and get out. Of course, from your past, whatever you can learn, for the future, whatever you can plan, and accordingly you proceed in the present with full awareness. But beyond that, don't begin the I and get involved. I'm conducting this class, I want everybody to appreciate my class, I want this to happen, that to happen. Then you are getting involved. You're not doing it with objectivity. This is a Nididhyasana for you. Nididhyasana means, like you soak the pickle, constantly. In vinegar or something, they keep soaking it. Like that, you've got to soak yourself in knowledge. One of the methods is teaching. So, we study, we reflect. Now you constantly keep on teaching, then you'll be soaking yourself in it. It is needed for you to get established. So you are doing it as a sadhana, nididhyasana. Incidentally, people may be getting benefited. But why you want to become personalized? I am doing, माई एक्शंस, रिजल्ट मिलना चाहिए, क्यों नहीं मिल रहे, यू नो, सो देन यू आर नॉट फंक्शनिंग एज अ विटनेस, यू आर गेटिंग इन्वॉल्व कंप्लीटली, दैट इज व्हाट ही सेइंग. इफ यू गेट अटैच्ड, यू वोंट बी एबल टू डू योर एक्शन प्रॉपर्ली. So you got to renounce the worries of the past, anxieties of the future, excitement in the present, and just plunge and do the action. I come prepared. Whatever I've studied to the best of my ability, I'll explain and get up. Of course, when you do an action, you want the results to be fine, but then you understand, it can be anything. So when you do such actions with objectivity, you will do it correctly. Otherwise your work will suffer. You know, when the person who is doing the work gets attached to the work, you'll be so cautious. And when you become so cautious, you won't function properly. Even in, you know, when you see a fielder fielding in cricket, he becomes very conscious. He misses the catch because he's not relaxed. He keeps his hands very tight. The ball bounces, goes inside and comes out. So, therefore he says, renunciation is very important while doing the action. He's not talking about renunciation of action. He's talking about renunciation in action. In this, what is the benefit? You will achieve success in the material world. Simultaneously, you will be exhausting the vasanas. You will be growing spiritually also. In fact, this is how a grihastha is supposed to live. In grihastha ashrama, you're supposed to live like this. There's nothing wrong in fulfilling your desires. Give it a direction and then from what you get out of it, you fulfill. So what happens is you are taking the object of the desire away from your mind while doing the action. So you don't strengthen that vasanas further. And since your attention has been on the ideal and the action, you are not thinking about the object. As a result, you don't create fresh desires. You're not thinking about anything else also. So you don't get to create any fresh desires. So the existing vasanas exhausted. Fresh vasanas are not formed. You grow spiritually also. So the way to really live life is this way. Choose a field of activity according to your nature. Whatever it is. In the world, everybody is needed. Nobody is superior, nobody is inferior. Everyone supplements and complements each other. You understand? So, each one has different nature. It helps. But what we do is we force our children to take up a particular, what do you call, field. Because we think that it will draw more money. Or we have started some business, so therefore the son or daughter should also get into that business. It's not fair at all. We have the nature. It's created with that mind. Why do you want to confuse them? You want them to grow, isn't it? Both materially and spiritually. Theek hai, Mahapar will be probably earning X amount here, maybe X to the power of 3. 3x of x to the power of 3, it doesn't matter. So what? That fellow will be happier. This fellow will be highly frustrated. In spite of all his wealth. So therefore he says, renunciation in action, not renunciation of action. Now, in the beginning, you should see when we say in the beginning, it is not renunciation of action. It is renunciation in action. What is the criteria based on which we are saying this? Why we are emphasizing on renunciation in action, not renunciation of action? Anybody?
That means even when you are working, you have to keep on doing your work, but without attachment.
No, no, I am not asking you to tell me what is renunciation in action. I am asking, why are we emphasizing on renunciation in action, not renunciation of action? Why?
Because we still have a lot of vasanas.
Absolutely. You have a lot of desires now. When you have desires, don't do renunciation of action. You will be an hypocrite. You will be sitting in the akar robe, but mentally be thinking of something else. Mentally be thinking about, many things from the world. So, you have to understand the state in which your mind is today. It is having full of desires, so many desires. You've got to naturally rise above those things. By forcing yourself out of it, you don't rise. In fact, what you resist will persist. You forcefully resist it, it will persist. You can't help it. You know? So therefore, you've got to follow renunciation in action. Then you will exhaust your desire slowly. So by the time you studied in the school, if you have studied this knowledge also along with it, you come out in the world, you do renunciation in action, what is called grihastashrama. Then you, by the time you are 45, 50, 52, 53 like that, your mind itself will say, "Arey yaar, bahut sara shopping mall dekh chuka hai, sara same hai. Naya naya aate jaate hai. Kya hai? Let it come. I am not interested. You have something to buy, you'll go. You are not just going to see this mountain, that mountain. Something is different here, something is different there. So you understand. They all belong to the same kind. They are not of different kind. This is a kya hai? So that is the state that you have now mentally become sannyasi. Now you can declare to the world if you want to that I am not interested in these things by taking a sannyasi lifestyle. Or you need not. That's a different matter. But thereafter, your mind is not thinking about the worldly things. Then you are in that state of sannyasi. So sannyasi is a mental state, while renunciation in action is practice. Okay, so that is why we say, after living like that properly, total fulfilled life you live, then you will be also comfortable in vanaprastha and sannyasa. That is different. Where your renunciation of action, the mind in you, you have done everything, you have handed over it to the other people, let them do. Now you just need basic, very little, simple living, high thoughts. You just live simple life, thinking about the higher aspects of it. So that is what he says. Then you will grow. While doing the action, you must also understand that there are three types of actions. That is the next topic. Let's read this, three types of action. So who will read? Sandhya ji, can you read?
Sure, Guruji.
You have the book, Sandhya ji?
Yes, I have, Guruji.
Now please read.
Three types of action. Human activities fall broadly under three categories based upon the manner in which they are performed. They are action performed with selfish desire, action with unselfish desire, action without desire.
So three types of actions are there based on the intention that backs the action. The manner in which they are performed is this. It is called selfish, unselfish, selfless. Action performed with selfish desire called selfish action. Action performed with unselfish desire, unselfish action. Action performed without desire, selfless action. Continue. Continue, please.
Yes, yes. The first type of action is propelled by an individual's egocentric desire to satisfy his selfish motives. To gain personal profit, he toils and sweats all his life for procuring more comfort and pleasures for self, which perhaps extends up to his family. He entertains no other ideal ego, ideal goal. The purpose of life does not reach beyond the egocentric acquisition and enjoyment. This is the lowest form of existence.
So, when a person is in the lowest level of development, he or she only considers themselves as this bundle of ego. They can't think beyond that. They are not able to identify with higher realm. So due to that, they only take care of their personal interests. The rest and all, they don't care. So that's why it is the first type of action is propelled by the individual's egocentric desire. I am here, I have to use all my intelligence, all my wealth, all my possessions, everything for enhancing my selfish joys. That's all. To satisfy his selfish motive. To gain personal profit. Nothing more, nothing less. That person sweats and toils all his life for procuring more comfort and pleasure for himself. See, there is nothing wrong in getting more comfort for yourself, but it is only for you, excluding everybody else. That is where it becomes selfish. At the cost of others also you can do that. That becomes selfish. So is this which perhaps maximum in many people's case, if at all it extends up to the family. That's all. You know? Me, my wife, my children, in many cases even parents are not included. In some cases the parents are included, but maybe in-laws are not included. In some cases, parents, in-laws, me, my wife, my children, that's it. Even siblings are not included, both sides siblings. Or little bit siblings. Beyond that they can't think. What is this? He entertains no other ideal, no goal. The purpose of life does not reach beyond his egocentric acquisition. That's it. Only thinks about himself or herself. And all the time interested in acquiring more and more for themselves and enjoying what they have acquired. This is the lowest form of existence. Lowest form of existence in the sense that a human being has a capacity to see that how he or she is indebted to the moon, to the sun, to the ocean, to the rivers, to everything, to other human beings, other species. When you begin to appreciate that intellectually, how can you continue to be selfish? Not possible. So, person who has got that broad-mindedness will be stuck in that level of selfishness, that's all. Nothing else. No? So that is what he says. Such is the lowest level or form of existence. Continue.
As a person turns spiritual, his work becomes less selfish. He visualizes a higher and noble ideal in life, an ideal which serves a common cause, directed to benefit his community or country. His activity is no longer confined to mere personal pleasures or profit. As a result, the desire loses its selfish stigma. The ideal for which he works embraces the welfare of the people at large. He strives and struggles for their happiness.
So when a person evolves a little more, he says, as a person turns spiritual, his work becomes more unselfish, less selfish. So, he is able to see a boundary which is far more expanded compared to that fellow's boundary. That fellow's boundary is very small. Here he includes more. not just family, maybe go up to community. Some people go up to country. Some people go up to the whole human species. But when it comes to other species, they don't care. But you can go even to include all other species. So like that, slowly, slowly your boundary can expand. But when the boundary is slightly expanded more than the selfish, you become unselfish. Slightly better, noble goal you have. So it is directed to the benefit of his country or community. And he is no longer confined to mere his personal profit. He is not thinking like that. What is good for my country? I'll do that. You know. See, for example, if we are benefiting, why do we pay tax? Is the concept came, why did it come? Okay, everybody else is also contributing, because of which I'm able to earn this. So from my income, I will give something to the total, again, for the benefit of everyone. That's what they give a name as tax. So that with that money, lot more improvements can be done, with that lot more productivity can be done, with that you can bring in more tax can be given, etc. So, if you are unselfish, you will not try to evade tax. I'm using a word very carefully, evade. You know, you will not try to evade tax. Because you understand. Unselfishness, I'm giving this example because it's not necessary that you have to go and dig the well, only then you are doing unselfish. No, you are running business. Your business can be done unselfishly or it can be done selfishly. Or it can even be done selflessly. The idea is to do it either unselfishly or selflessly, not selfishly. Even this Bhagavad Gita class can be done selfishly, unselfishly, selflessly. So, but in unselfishness, there is one problem. What is that? I have to do this to fulfill other people's need. So many people. You don't have to get involved. You understand? So, even in unselfishness, there is a desire. Selfishness is desire for oneself. Unselfishness is desire for another or more people. But it's still desire. So there is a possibility of getting involved in it. It's getting stuck there. So he says that desire in unselfishness loses selfish stigma. The ideal for which he works embraces the welfare of the people at last. He strives and struggles for their happiness. So when there is an obstruction in that area, he will get agitated if he is involved. Continue.
And as he reaches spiritual perfection, he becomes free from desire, works with a sense of detachment, merely does what he ought to do, with no desire propelling him to act, nor anxiety driving him to gain the fruit of action. He lives in a state of fulfillment, revels in the bliss of his supreme self, enjoys self-sufficiency. None of his actions can give him any more pleasure or joy. He thus carries out his work in a spirit of renunciation. That should be your attitude towards work.
See, what he's saying is, when you say selfless action, the third category, acting without desire, please understand, no action is possible without desire. Now, when we say without desire, what it means is there is no desire for the world. Because when you gain the knowledge, you understand what am I going, whether I am there or not, world will continue. As long as I am there, I have to do what I have to do, I will do that. But not thinking that I have to serve everybody, I have to uplift them, as if without me they won't get a grow. So I understand that. Then, at the same time, we have already seen, none can remain without action. Everybody must plunge into action. So I see what is my nature in this total. Okay, it is teaching. I teach. What is their nature? Engineering, do that. Somebody else, medicine, they are doing that. They are serving. So I am having the desire for liberation now. I am not having desire to fulfill the people's desires or need. I am doing this now as an obligatory duty to get back to the self. Incidentally, I may be serving people. And incidentally, from the profit, I will also be fulfilling my personal nature or inclinations or likes or whatever. But I am not doing it solely for that purpose. That is called desireless action. In desireless action, there is desire for the higher. Higher means the self. Now, what is the point in all this? Because when you do selfish action, you may get a lot of acquisition and enjoyment. That is the initial two goals that people have. When you do unselfish action, there is another goal that people pursue, and that result is what is called as dharma or punya. Majority of the people are stuck in this. Dharmartha kama, dharmartha kama, dharmartha kama. Beyond that, they can't think. Punya, punya. They keep on earning punya by doing a lot of unselfish work. Then comes the last goal, which is neither dharma, nor artha, nor kama is going to give me redemption. So then what? Only knowing the truth about myself will give me redemption. But to know about the truth about myself, the desires are my impediments. So what do? I can't act on desires. So now I will do it as an ambassador for God or divinity. You know, this is the nature and do it. Not having any desire to cater to people, community. Incidentally, it may be, they may be getting benefited. You know, no. My community, only Guptas. All Sharmas can go to hell. Only Indians. All Pakistanis can go to hell. Not that kind of a thought. You know. You just do your work as an instrument in the hands of totality. As a sadhana. Objectively. There is no desire for the worldly acquisition, enjoyment or punya. Therefore it's called selfless. You are just functioning out of mumuksha. To liberate. Realize the self. So, uske liye jo karna, I'm doing. You know, thus, he says, with no desire propelling him to act, nor anxiety driving him to gain the fruit of action, which is acquisition, enjoyment, punya. Milenge, theek hai, nahi milenge, phir bhi theek hai. I don't care. I don't care in the sense, not indifference. He who made it knew what it needed better than a man like me. That attitude. Like he talks about in that poem, Olive Tree. It's okay. I will continue. There is this law which will take care. No one gets what they desire. Everybody gets what they deserve. Nobody can deny what they deserve. Nothing in this universe can deny what a person deserves. A person deserves, he or she will get it. Doesn't matter. Whatever may be the obstacle, it's a question of time, they'll get it. So therefore, he is not functioning for the fruit of action. He says, a person just does it, he revels in bliss because it's not attached with any desire. He enjoys self-sufficiency, doing everything himself. None of his actions can give him any more pleasure or joy other than what it is inherent in it. He thus carries out his work in a spirit of renunciation. That should be your attitude towards God. So in other words, you don't do it with selfish desire. You don't do it with unselfish desire. You just do it for a higher goal. As an instrument, you just function. Then you are being selfless. Continue, please.
Renunciation means getting rid of the selfish ego, banishing egocentric desires. It is work minus desire. Cast off your worldly motives to work. Exercise the evil spirit of desire. Do not become a slave to attraction and repulsion. Be poised, objective in your work. Like and dislike, desire and anxiety pollute your work. Serve without a motive. Service is worship. The law of life is that your mind should be at rest while your body is engaged in action. Let the activities rest in your mind as objects of the world rest on the retina of your eyes. Hills and valleys, flora and fauna, things and beings lie wholly, faithfully, gently on your retina. They do not burden the eyes. Your eyes remain ever free and unaffected. Just so should your mind remain undisturbed by life's activities.
So, you're saying this acting without desire is called renunciation in action. And what is renunciation means? It is not renunciation of action, it is renunciation of ego. It's getting rid of the selfish ego. How do you get rid of the selfish ego? By knowledge. The more and more knowledge you get. Knowledge doesn't mean through books only. You know. But the moment you get that higher vision, higher knowledge, you cannot be selfish thereafter. You cannot be just working for your fulfillment of your selfish, egocentric desires. So it is banishing egocentric desires. It is work minus desire. Mera, ye hona chahiye, wo hona chahiye, iske liye main kar raha hu, kisi aur ke bare mein I will not think. No. Cast off your worldly motive to work. In other words, when you go to work, you are going to get something out of it. Mujhe ye milna chahiye. Work ke dwara, I want this. Could be tangible, it could be intangible. But I want this. You know, you are putting yourself as the beggar. Through work, you want to get this. That's what he means by saying worldly motive. I want to get a bungalow. I want to get a car. I want to get this membership in this club. I want to, you know, etc., etc. So he says, absorbize the evil spirit of desire. Do not become a slave to attraction and repulsion. Just your personal likes and dislikes fulfill karne ke liye, don't use your life. That's what it means. Be poised, objective in your work. Like and dislike, desire and anxiety pollute your work. Serve without a motive. Service is worship. The law of life is that your mind should be at rest while your body is engaged in action. These are all words of Swami Ramakrishna. Fascinating saint. Yes. Why should there be motive in your fellow's work? You look at the world, nature, everything is functioning without a motive. Only human being has a motive. You know? Mujhe kya milega? 10%? 20%? A chance? Or nothing? You understand? Something or other I want. What is in it for me? What is in it for me? No animal thinks like that. No rose, no flowers, things like that. They are not functioning that way. They are just expressing themselves. They have no motive. So he says, let the activities rest in your mind as objects of the world rest on your retina of your eyes. Also, example is also given by Swami Ramakrishna. Now, you are perceiving the world. The stimuli is entering and falling on your retina. Is there any strain on your retina? Nothing. Similarly, do. Understand that you are obligated. Everything is functioning normally. Sun is giving light, vitality. It's not thinking, why should I give? Nothing like that. Simply giving. Without it, can you live? Similarly, you are a singer, sing. You are a dancer, dance. Just be yourself with no motive. That's all he's saying. He says, hills and valleys, flora and fauna, things and beings lie wholly, faithfully, gently on your retina. They do not burden the eyes. Your eyes remain ever free and unaffected. Just so should your mind remain undisturbed by life's activities. Mind becomes disturbed when it gets involved like this, selfish. When the mind understands the knowledge and doesn't get involved, any amount of work, there is nothing that you are expecting out of it. There is no action that will be done by you with a labor attitude. You do it out of love. Purely out of love. When you function there, no strain, no stress, nothing, all is madness that you've been thinking that work can give me stress. That's what he's saying. The mind will be calm. And body will be engaged in action. Today what is happening is mind is fully engaged in the action. Body is not active. Because mind is all the time thinking, ye chahiye, wo chahiye. What will worldly people think? Ye kya sochenge, wo kya sochenge. Then you cannot act. Lot of us are physically not acting. Mentally craving, desiring, everything. You've turned into a hypocrite. Therefore, he says, don't do that. Learn from nature, he says in the next paragraph. Please read.
Take a look at nature. Learn your lessons from the sun, moon and stars. They work tirelessly, impersonally. The good earth yields vegetation. The rivers flow, flowers bloom. Give out sweet fragrance with no ego counting them, no personal motive, no selfish desire to fulfill. So too, let your work be free from the taint of egoism and selfishness. Try to emulate the magnificence of nature. Rise above the idea of the little self. Banish the thought of doership. Discard the selfish ego. Your work then turns out glorious. You will command prosperity and peace. But if you succumb to your ego, work suffers. You cease to be peaceful or prosperous. That is the law.
So when you look at the nature, nothing in the nature is acting with a selfish motive. They have absolutely no motive. Oh, today is Sunday or Monday. The park is closed. You know, so what's the point in blooming? Is thinking that, well, nobody will be there to appreciate my, beauty. So I'm not going to bloom today. Does any flower say that? I go to the rose garden on the day it is closed. Is rose thinking like that? It's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, doesn't matter who comes, who doesn't come. I am not doing it to satisfy anybody else. This is the nature. I express that and get out. That's it. No prefix, no suffix. Just do it. It's called selfless action. You can develop that action through observation. Everything in this universe is functioning like that. And I am obligated, actually. The first 25 years of my life when I am educating myself, who was paying all my bills? Constantly I am taking, no? So don't I have an obligation to pay back? So I will not be looking at work as opportunity to take. I will look at work as an opportunity to extend myself. Continue doing. And whatever comes out of that, what is wrong in fulfilling my desires? As long as it's not harmful to anybody else. So, this is what he's saying. Learn from the nature. Look at it. From the sun, the moon, the stars. They are just giving what they have to do. That's it. He says the good earth yields vegetation. The rivers flow. Flowers bloom. They give out sweet fragrance. With no ego prompting them. No personal motive. No selfish desire to fulfill. You understand? We are not thinking what is in it for me. Cow simply gives milk. Just keeps giving milk. It's not thinking what I will get in return. Only human being looks at it as an investment. There are time hai. Mujhe kya milenge? What is in it for me? But then obviously you'll be stressed. He says, try to emulate the magnificence of this nature. Rise above the idea of the little self. Anywhere you go, me, I. All that time just thinking about you. Even in a relationship, and a person is in a relationship out of attachment, that person, whoever is in that relationship out of attachment, he or she will want the other person to listen to their words. But they don't have any sympathy or empathy towards the other person's difficulties. Yes. Only they exist. They're fully there. Nobody exists. They want to live their life. Even children, when they choose something, no, this will look nice on me. Take it. Me. Everywhere it's me. I. One of the exercises that Swamiji says to get rid of his I is you write a letter, write emails or WhatsApp, short messages. The short messages it's all very broken way of communication. But when you write a letter, many times we use I. I went there, I came. He says, try to write a letter with no I or very, very minimum I. You try to remove the I from all the areas where you have planted it in life. You see how blissful, enjoyable your life starts becoming. It will be, from that day onwards, it will become fantastic. So, that's what he says, banish the thought of doership. Discard the selfish ego. Work then terms are glorious. Demand prosperity and peace. But if you succumb to your ego, you will suffer. Your work will suffer. You cease to be peaceful and prosperous. That is the law. If the law means you cannot change it, I cannot change it. That is how it is. You cannot help it. You will be suffering. If you have this I, selfishness, to that extent, you will suffer. Then don't blame. Law will function. Law will not be partial to, okay, this person is a sincere weekly class attendant. Usko to relaxation. Aisa kuch nahi hai. Whether you attend, you don't attend. You are selfish, you will suffer. Even if you are teaching. But teaching Vedanta, you will be selfish. Obviously, you will suffer. You are suffering even though I have been only teaching Vedanta. So what? You taught Vedanta, but you are selfish. Because of that, you will suffer. Nobody can help you. You cease to be peaceful or prosperous. That is the law. In this book, many places it keeps saying, that is the law, that is the law, that is the law. That is the law, that is the law means you have to live by it. You try not to respect that law, you will only will suffer. Law doesn't see whether you are rich or poor or small or tall, good or bad, all that. You know, gone above it, against it, it will give the reward accordingly. So that is why he says, you must grab this ego. That's the most difficult thing. And everything, somehow we want the I to be there. Now massaged. Continue, please.
People carry the impression that work suffers when desire does not stimulate it. They are afraid that work will come to a halt if they lose their desire. This is not true. As evidenced from the life of a child, the child is one of the most active beings, ever bubbling with energy, effervescing with activity. Yet the child has no motive or desire, no plan or scheme, hope or expectation in its mind. Similarly, in your life, there need be no desire for success, no expectation of reward. In fact, desire and expectation impair your activity. All you need to do is to let your intellect set a pattern of life and plunge into action. Not worry over the dead past, nor get anxious about the unborn future. Just act in the living present. Then alone will work turn productive, successful. Few understand this law. People are steeped in conservating ignorance. Do not fall in line with the ignoramuses. Stand by this fundamental principle of action. You will be crowned with enduring peace and prosperity.
So, people have an impression that if I don't have a desire, how will I act? Why will I act? So, you're saying there is a very wrong impression. They are afraid that the work will come to halt. They lose their desires. This is not true. As evident from the child is this. How is this child functioning? Child is functioning out of love. You understand? Purely out of love. There is no other desire. The child loves to play. The child loves to do this. The child is fully involved in engaging in the activity of its love. Similarly, you engage yourself fully in the activity of your love, your nature. Don't expect anything out of it. Your intellect should be guiding you in that field properly, not become selfish. So therefore, he says, similarly in life, there need be no desires for success. Child is not, you know, bothered, just wants to play. After some time, the child grows slowly, slowly, and the child becomes aware of the ego, then the child is saying, I must win, then cheating happens, this happens, that happens. But when the child is so small, is the child thinking about the future? The child thinking about success, name, fame, awards? Nothing. Child is absolutely having no interest whatsoever. He doesn't know, child doesn't. Similarly, use what the child rejects unconsciously, you should with knowledge reject consciously. That's what it is. So you do your actions out of purely out of love, purely out of gratitude, purely out of obligation, purely out of sadhana. And that is called selfless action. Then you will have tremendous energy. The thing is, then you will function like that, only you will actually do the correct action. And as a result, you will be getting the benefits at the material level also. You will be getting at the material level. He says, all you need to do is let your life, or let your intellect set a pattern of life and plunge into action. You say, okay, what do I want to do? I have this nature. Okay. I will set that, start plunging in it with full discipline. There I don't compromise in discipline. But I don't think in terms of what I can get out of it. Not to manipulate and get something out of it. To cater to my ego. In other words, I don't use the action to give any security to my ego. Unfortunately, we are all trying to find the security through. And any amount of the world you give to the ego, ego will not be satisfied. It's okay if I have got all these things to protect me, then I need Devaloka. Now, Devaloka is also given, then also I will not feel protected. That's why Indra is never feeling protected. The only time you feel protected is with this knowledge of the self. Therefore, he says, you know, you don't worry about all that, you just plunge. Setting a pattern of living through your intellect, then plunge. No worries of the past, which is dead. No anxiety of the future, which is unborn. And no excitement in the present, just do your actions in the present. Then he says, work will turn in very productive, successful. You understand this law. Why you want to pollute your actions with a motive? The moment you pollute your actions with a motive, you qualify it, you modify it, you destroy it. Because then you say, through this I want to achieve that, through that I want to achieve this. And then there will be fear, whether I will achieve it. And even if you achieve it, will I be able to retain it? What will happen to it? In spite of achieving it, still people, do they think that I have done something? Or no? I compare myself with so many others. Go through all these kind of mental tortures which takes away my energy to do any further action. You renounce all that. Simply do it purely with no motive of the consequence. People are steeped in conservative ignorance. Do not fall in line with ignorance. They are in total ignorance. They think, hey, I don't have it, I will act. They don't know what is it to act out of love. It's purely out of love. Love for the mother nation. People just throw themselves against a cannon. You understand? So, it was just pure love. The ego, the selfish ego, was sacrificed in the higher altar. That is what is the symbolism of Jesus Christ being crucified. It is a crucifixion of ego. मेरा 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 मेरा, वो थॉट को क्रूसीफाई करो। हाउ? इन तेरा, तेरा तुझको अर्पण, क्या लागे मेरा। But मेरा हैज टू बी सैक्रिफाइज इन तेरा। He who took care of me when I was in my mother's womb, He who is taking care of all the planets to revolve without hitting each other, He who makes sure that the seeds all grows and starts bearing fruits, He who makes sure that there has to be periodical rains, not too much, not too little, and He takes care of that. Will He not know what you need? No, your body. You have not been getting what you need. Is there any problem in that? Food reached you when you were in mother's womb. Mother was eating, but it reached you. So there is a system in place. Trust in that. Stand by this fundamental principle of action. You will be crowned with enduring peace and prosperity. Instantly, the moment you have dropped that eye, you will be peaceful. With the peace, you will be able to function with a lot more productivity. Your productivity will be far superior. As a result, success, everything will come. But for that, first you have to be peaceful. If you want to be peaceful, you have to give up the eye. If you hold on to the eye, you will be affected. You drop the eye, you will be happy. And you can only drop that eye through knowledge, no other method. Let's conclude now. ॐ पूर्णमदः पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ कायेन वाचा मनसेन्द्रियैर्वा बुद्ध्यात्मना वा प्रकृते स्वभावात् करोमि यद्य सकलं परस्मै नारायणायेति समर्पयामि।